My first thing is to make an acknowledgement of country. We are all listening to this Zoom from different countries. So I would like to acknowledge all of those countries and the traditional owners of those lands. In particular, I live in Wangal lands, so I would like to particularly acknowledge the ancestors there and all the customs and cultures that have nurtured this land. So I want to thank the Indigenous people for providing this wonderful country for us to enjoy and taking care of it. And this gathering on Zoom is going to pay our respects to all the elders, past and present, and also those emerging, and any Aboriginal women who are listening to this Zoom. The idea about this came from an event called Generation Women, and they have women from every 30s, 50s, 60s, 70s. It's amazing what you find out about women that you never knew or wouldn't ever find out. We've invited today Bridget. She's in her 50s. And Cecil, also easily coerced because she's on the 1040 committee. Thank you, Fiona, for offering. And she's in her 60s. And then Diane, who I suddenly realised she's always doing a lot of work, but she never gets a chance to be one of the key people. So Diane is in her 70s. We want everybody else to have a chance to chat about things in their own breakaway groups. If you haven't got the questions in front of you, they were just stimulus things. So the idea was to talk about aging in any way you like. Yeah, okay, over to Bridget. And thank you so much, Bridget, for being willing to talk today. I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say myself.
Thanks, Sylvia. Before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge the land and that I'm talking to you from today, the lands of the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation, and I'd like to pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging. Hello, everyone. And like Sylvia just introduced me, my name is Bridget Cleaver and I am 57 years old. I'd especially like to say a big hello and a thank you to Sylvia, who invited me to speak to you this afternoon about ageing in your 50s. The topic of ageing is an interesting one. Sylvia suggested when I speak today to choose an aspect of ageing in my 50s that has some humour to it. I racked my brain for something funny and really I couldn't think of anything. It was in my 50s that I got a new boss who was ageist, sexist and homophobic. He got rid of the few women in my department and started hiring men who were similarly revolting. Needless to say, I was mistreated and totally isolated. I broke both my wrists in my 50s due to chasing an overweight, anxiety-driven bulldog who ran out of the door in the middle of the night. I tripped over a tree root and broke my wrists, two teeth, and glasses. It was in my early 50s that my mum's dementia got even worse, and she refused to shower or maintain any semblance of hygiene, not to mention believing that Scott Morrison was visiting her every day. It was in my 50s that one of my eldest, dearest friends, Kate, had a life-changing stroke and lost her independence. Watching her deteriorate broke my heart. And then, to top it all off, it was in my 50s I started menopause. There is absolutely nothing humorous about menopause, at least not in my experience. Sleepless nights, hot flushes, bouts of sadness, urinary incontinence. Nope, Sylvia, I can't find anything that's remotely humorous about aging in your 50s. But then, during a recent bout of terrible insomnia, I realised it was because of menopause that living in my 50s is actually the best decade I've ever lived. Those sleepless nights gave me the opportunity to think about my life, what was and wasn't serving me anymore. I mean, what else is there to do when you experience a hot, sleepless night? You think and you contemplate. It was during a night of no sleep that I decided enough was enough at work. I was sick of the mistreatment, sick of crawling out of bed every morning, frightened and anxious about the day ahead. I was sick of being unhappy. I just couldn't imagine another 15 years of this shit. Because my partner and I were fortunate enough to have well-paying jobs, well, as a teacher, mine's not so great, but she has a very well-paying job. We were able to manage to pay off our mortgage and have a bit of savings and no debt. My partner loves her job and is paid well. She was thrilled with my decision to leave work, and her words to me were, "I just want my old Bridget back, the one who was always smiling and laughing." Oh my God, had I been that miserable that I was affecting my partner and probably those around me? So I immediately told the Department of Education to shove their job. Since then, the smile has not left my face. My life as a 50-year-old woman is completely different to 10 years ago. I love my 50s. I am having so much fun. I also realise I'm in a very lucky position to be able to live this way and to retire early. So I'm very grateful for the situation I'm in and certainly make the most of every day. I now spend my days doing what nourishes me and makes me happy. My body and mind as a woman in her 50s is still strong and active. I started volunteering at the Sydney Dog and Cat Home. We rescued two cats. I never ever liked cats until we got the two that we've got. And now I just so totally understand cats, and I'm now a crazy cat lady. I started a kayaking group called the Mullets, who clean rubbish out of the Cooks River every month. And I've met the most wonderful people through this environmental group. I started studying again. I got a new job teaching adults to garden, but it only lasted for 2 days because COVID hit and I lost it. But anyway, I don't care. It was fun while I had it. I also got into regular exercise and started bushwalking again. I'm also taking art lessons, which I love. I think my partner secretly hoped when I left work that I'd do more domestic duties. Well, that certainly hasn't happened, but at least I make her breakfast every morning. Having more time means I can visit my mother more frequently in her nursing home and not get anxious or agitated by it. Mum can be very hard work. She has serious OCD and is fixated on time, asking every couple of minutes what time it is. She rings me constantly. Her record is 157 times in one day, and that's from a period from about 9 o'clock to about 1 o'clock. And it's the same thing. Bridget, what time is it? Before this latest outbreak of COVID, I started taking Mum swimming at the local pool, and we reconnected on a completely different level. She is so happy in the water. She's absolutely in heaven. Her face looks so serene when leisurely floating through the water. She doesn't talk, she doesn't obsess, she just is. She's in peace. She then discovered, unfortunately, the hot spa at the swimming centre we attend. And with my terrible hot flushes, it's not much fun for me to be there. But I just dangle my feet in the water and watch the kids swimming while Mum loves just lying in the pool. I also shower my mother at the end of the swim. That was a bit confronting at first, as I hadn't seen my mother naked since my early teens. But now it's just me witnessing the aging process. My mum is 86, her skin is wrinkled and saggy, her back is hunched over, and her body is practically hairless. In the shower, she is calm and relaxed. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to be able to share this time with her. And it's also making me realise what I'll probably look like at 86 at two, and I'm quite cool with that. Not working has also given me the opportunity to care for my 93-year-old darling friend, Kate. After a major stroke, Kate has struggled with her speech, reading, hearing, and mobility. Although sad to watch Kate lose her independence, I have enjoyed being able to support her during this difficult time. I really thought I had lost her last year, which greatly upset me, as I never really sat down and told her how much I loved her. The woman I spoke to told me on the 2nd of July 2021, which was her 93rd birthday, that she had just had another major stroke and to pray for her, as it was unlikely that she was going to survive the day. That night, she was sitting up in bed flirting with one of the nurses. That's our Kate. She is full of surprises. It's been a gift being able to support Kate during this time. I often think how we first met, me, a young girl in her late 20s, she, a woman in her early 60s. I thought she was so worldly. We met through the Women's Electoral Lobby. We were both Kiwis and we immediately hit it off. Over the past 30 years, Kate has taught me so much, sharing quotes and sayings with me. One of her favourites is, "A little bit of what you fancy does you good, Bridget." She also always told me never to judge people. Be curious, but not judgmental. She also always espoused the importance of kindness in everyday dealings with people. I used to watch her interact with those people around her, And she was always so interested in who they were and treated everyone with respect and gentleness. I remember thinking to myself as a young woman, I want to be just like Kate when I'm older. Now I am, I try to emulate her behaviour, not always successfully, but I try. I know and totally understand that for some women, as they get older, they begin to embrace the inner cranky woman, no longer tolerating and putting up with bad behaviour. Why should they? Often they've lived a life of having to be nice and tolerate mistreatment, and I get that. But I also don't want to be cranky or angry. It serves no purpose other than hurting you. I want to be known as kind. I want to be remembered as good-natured. There's enough anger in the world. If someone hurts or mistreats you, or mistreats me, I either try to express to them in the kindest way I can that I feel challenged by their behaviour, or if it's a constant behaviour, I remove myself totally from them. Someone wise once told me, by removing a toxic person from your life, you make space for a wonderful person to enter. This has certainly been my experience. Hopefully, when I die, I will be remembered as being good-natured and kind. And as Kate always said to me, you attract more bees with honey than vinegar. Being in my 50s makes me recognise and truly appreciate the life I have. My life didn't start that way, far from it, but now it's terrific. I have the most beautiful, the most talented, the most loving partner in the world, Kylie. We've been together for 28 years. We share a gorgeous 34-year-old daughter. I have the most wonderful friendships. I'm in good health. I have a lovely home, two cats and a dog, a gorgeous garden, and I'm certainly very fortunate. So, Sylvia, maybe my 50s haven't always been fun and laughter, but they have been a life-changing decade for me, helping me recognise what is important and nourishing for me.
Wow!
You're definitely good-natured and kind, and you've already achieved that. So just continue it, because that's what everybody loves about you.
You know, it was funny, before I came on, I was so nervous, and Kylie said to me, Bridget, you are with the best women. They're going to be so wonderful with you. Just relax and have a lovely time, which is what I've had. So thanks very much, everyone.
Fantastic. And I love it that you gave the Department of Education the push. That's good.
You did. Thank you. Thanks, Alex.
I'd like to now welcome Fiona. And thank you so much, Fiona, for offering to speak. And this is a good chance for us to find out your inner secrets about aging. Thank you, Fiona.
Thank you. And Bridget, thank you for your stories about your life and what a hard act to follow. And although you said there was no humour, I have been chuckling to myself quietly throughout the talk. So I'm going to start my chat about life and ageing in the 60s with a quote from Lucille Ball. And she said, the secret to staying young is to live honestly, eat slowly, and lie about your age. So I'm not going to lie about my age. I'm actually proud of my age. I'm 60, yeah, see, I've even forgotten that. So I'm 67 and soon to be 68. I don't see myself as that age. I always see myself as someone younger. So when someone says, how old are you? I think, oh, yeah, 40, 45, 50, what age am I? And it surprises when my actual age comes out. So my view of myself is not as a 67-year-old. And I guess my lifestyle and the choices I make and the things I do reflect that. When I was a young child, I didn't know any of my grandparents. They'd all passed away by the time I was very young, two or three. However, we did visit as a family, often on Sunday lunch, my Aunt Clara. She was my great aunt and very, very old. She lived in a dark terrace in Leichhardt, 42 Macaulay Street. She wore black clothing and had her grey hair in a bun. The curtains in this terrace in Leichhardt were always closed, and I assume she was about 100. So I had to actually look up on Trove and find out how old she was when she died. So it said she died at age 84 in 1966. So my memories of her would have been when she was in her late 70s. I was shocked because now I see someone in their 70s or early 80s are still very young, and my colleagues and my friends that I'll go out and do things with and go out for dinner with. My image of them is very different to my little stooped, grey-haired, bun-wearing Aunt Clara. So one of the things that happened, I think, and to a lot of people, and Bridget, you've expressed this in a very different way to the way that I was thinking about it, and that is leaving work, retiring. Because for a lot of people, and myself included, what happens is a loss of agency, because so many of us derive our self-image and who we are through our jobs. We may be doctors, we may be nurses, we may be teachers. And throughout our working lives, we get a lot of kudos. We get our position in society through this actual employment, through this identity of being this person. So when it comes to your 60s and you're removed from this work position, it becomes quite stressful. Who am I? What is the meaning of my life? How will I survive financially? So my story was, I've had a few careers, and initially I worked in government, in welfare, and I had a high position in district office. And this is in my 40s, and I think it was about my 40s, yeah, I decided to change careers and I became a cleaner. So I had went through a lot of things then. So when I went out to parties, people said, oh, what do you do? I would say, oh, I'm an aeronautical engineer, rather than say I clean toilets or I clean, you know, blocks of units. And they say, oh, what does that involve? And I say, well, give me a piece of paper and we'll start folding it and we'll make a paper aeroplane. And that's what I do. I design aircraft. We would spend the rest of the evening playing with paper aeroplanes. So I guess after a few career changes, I then became a real estate agent and had my own real estate office in Newtown for over 20 years. So, and then I sold that, which made my security, and I paid off my mortgage. So I was looking at retirement. So that was then secure. I'd paid off my house. I actually had a home for the rest of my retirement, but I still wasn't ready to retire. And I was working as a strata manager. But unfortunately, when COVID hit, I lost my job. I was the first to go because there were too many people in the office. I was also a single female. I didn't have any children. And I was therefore seen as more expendable. So, and since then, that was hard to take. And I then spent 2 months being angry and fighting with the likes of government agencies trying to get some money. And of course, then I hit the age of 66 and I could no longer get unemployment benefits, could I? Because I wasn't employable anymore. I was old and I should have gone on the age pension, but that didn't work anyway either, because I had too many assets. I had a little studio that the bank owns, you know, and I saw that as security for my old age, which turned out to be non-security for my old age. So that changing and fighting with the government and being told that, no, 66, you're no longer employable, you can't get the unemployment benefit any longer, you must go on the old age pension, was quite a thing to work through. So those sorts of changes to how we support ourselves, how we set ourselves up, the meaning of our existence. I then had to go through other ways rather than through work. And I now do some work, part-time work for NDIS, a couple of two mornings a week. I also still help people in real estate, people who are finding it hard to get their properties ready for sale or for management. And I just work with them doing project management. It's not a big money earner, but it does bring in some. But it also uses my skills as a real estate agent and helping people work through those processes. And also my work with NDIS is also good and helps, you know, feel like I'm helping people and still contributing as employable, even though the government defines me as being over 66 and unemployable. My health, I work very hard on my health. I go to yoga if I can 4 times a week. And this keeps me, my blood flowing through my body, my muscles toned, my bones healthy. And touch wood or wherever, I've never been in hospital all my life. I was not even born in a hospital. And I am on no medication. So hopefully that this will continue and for as long as I can. So I work hard on that. I work hard on looking at the meaning of my existence and helping other people and looking at why are we here and what can we do to help. And I found this group 1040, a wonderful support in that. So I'd like to thank every one of you for that. Yes. Thank you, Wendy. And I just want to finish. I went last week to my doctor and because I had a little inflection that wouldn't clear up on my foot. And he looked at it and said, oh, you haven't got a tumour. You're fine. Here's some medication. You know, you'll be right. And he said, by the way, we better look at, you know, all the other things, your blood tests. And I went, oh, no, I know I've got high cholesterol and all these sorts of things. I just try and avoid it and, you know, not worry about it. And he said, oh, we better do your BMI. And I thought, oh, really? Anyway, he came out with the BMI. He worked it out. And he sort of said, oh, he said, it's a little bit high. And I went, oh, is it? Having no idea what high meant or really. Anyway, I thought mostly meant overweight, fat, you know, all those sorts of things. But I sat there trying to deny it all. And I said, oh, is that a bad thing or a good thing? You know, what is this? And he said, well, he said, your BMI is really the equivalent of a Bondi Lifesaver, you know, like fairly boofy. So I said, I'm happy with that. Thank you. So I've come to you and sit and hear and talk to you with the BMI of a Bondi Lifesaver. And I'm happy with that.
Thank you. I hope it's a woman Lifesaver.
Great, great.
He went like this, so I'm Thank happy you. That's a woman too.
Fiona, you've had a very exciting history and getting to your current age with such great health and vigour and still giving out there to the community. Thanks for all your work in 1040. We couldn't do without her. She's our finance officer. Our treasurer. Thank you. So I'll now like to introduce Diane, known to all of you. Diane, like all of us, has had a very checkered and interesting history. So if you haven't any idea about it, let's hear how she's aged so wonderfully and she's still with us and still doing so much. Over to you, Diane.
I'm 72. And I identify as a lesbian and feminist. I read that feminism gets seen by younger women as nostalgia from a bygone era. And some define it as women hating men. And I find that very sad. As a feminist, I want to be part of the world. I want to be part of those who want to change the world, especially the position of women in our society. Access, equity, social justice, and the rights of women have always been my catch cry. And I have witnessed a few changes. But as we age, even lesbian feminists are at risk of becoming invisible. We are those poor things that need to be offered a seat on the bus, or we're seen as a relic to be smiled at, but not taken seriously. At the age of 72, I enjoy creative endeavors. I'm a technology user. I'm also someone who lives with a major health challenge. And I worry about the medical profession that I have to deal with periodically. Are they starting to stereotype me and not give me the same attention or the care that they might give to a woman of 30? Of course, that is starting to happen, but it's only part of the picture. When I was 18, I started exploring my sexuality and decided that I was at least bisexual, possibly lesbian. I never wanted to get married, and at that time, definitely did not want children. I was in New Orleans and had not come across any feminists, but definitely had come across lesbians. And I thought 30 was old. And when I turned 30, I thought I was old. Over the hill, too old to achieve anything. I was in India at the time, hoping to do volunteer work at a women's refuge and an orphanage, though I still had not met any feminists. Health intervened when I returned to Oz, and that changed my plans, and doors had to be closed, and new doors opened. I met feminists, and by age 35, realized I was definitely lesbian. The health intervention was having to have open heart surgery. At the age of 40, I was going through menopause. Health problems meant that I had to give up my photography business. I fell into a deep depression, and various childhood memories of abuse arose. That was a challenging time for me, but that was menopause, and not, in my opinion, not aging. Menopause is part of the aging process, but I thought of it as a health issue. At age 50, I didn't know if I was going to make the year. My heart had recently gone into an arrhythmia and had other damage. Heart challenges loomed very large, but I was still here at the next milestone of 60. When I turned 70, I found it hard to believe that I was now part of the elderly. I retired at 67 because of my health, and they didn't want me to retire. I enjoyed what I was doing, and they offered me to teach anything I wanted, but anyway, I felt that I needed to because of my health, and so I was fine with that, really. I'm really glad that I retired, even though it was having to walk away something I really, really liked and enjoyed. I have too many things to do now. I taught myself how to use Zoom in my 70th year. At the beginning of the pandemic, I discovered I could play cards with friends online using Zoom to talk to them. I host Zoom events and meetings for 1040, and I'm a member of Web Sisters. We manage the 1040 website. I developed my printmaking skills, and I was part of a printmaking exhibition. And unlike my 30th year, at 72, I do not think of myself as old. My activities have changed, it's true, but that's because of health. And if I didn't have those problems, I'd still be out there climbing into valleys and bush bashing along creeks and definitely joining the Van Dykes. But such is life, and doors close and others open. Most of my friends are my age, so I don't notice how much we are slowing down. We are all in this process together. Being involved with 1040 has helped me to expand my social networks, and creative endeavors have saved me from the white noise of social stereotyping. The biggest challenge with aging that I notice is keeping up with the new technology. I am what is known as an early adopter. I'm not afraid of technology. I was teaching Intro to Computing and Digital Storytelling before I retired. But all I learned in the past 20 years is now old, superseded. And trying to keep up with all the new ways of communication leaves me with no time to smell the flowers. I do have a Twitter account and an Instagram account and a Facebook account and a blog and an email account, and I do know how to send texts and pics on my phone. However, I barely have time to keep up with my emails and texts, and let alone the Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and Netflix. And if I blink, they're likely to upgrade them all, and they won't be recognizable when I try to access them again. I enjoy slowing down. That might be part of aging, but the slower I go, the faster the world, the rest of the world seems to move. And I'm just glad to have friends who are going through the same process. Aging also brings me closer to the last chapter of my life. And some of my friends who are older are beginning to fade, have strokes, heart attacks, have dementia, or some other debilitating health issue that takes their time and their energy away from them. And I can only be a witness. I can't rescue them. And that aspect is one of the most painful challenges. I have to acknowledge my own mortality. And what do I want to say before that chapter closes? That is one of my questions. And have I said it?
Thank you very much, Diane. And yes, you are still young at heart, and I'm sure you're keeping up much better than many of us with all the technology. Without your technological skills, we wouldn't be here now, because I must add that some of us on 1040 committee, not all, were a bit nervous. I know Wendy was very good on Zoom, but we were very nervous about how to do Zoom, and Diane did some tutoring and got us all getting going. And it's been a godsend, during the last 2 years. And it's fantastic that we've been able to keep connected because of all the lockdowns and difficulties that people of our age have faced in keeping in touch with each other. I've hardly noticed the lockdowns, really. Okay. Well, thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
And now, Diane will put us into groups.
Sylvia, I want to say something that I think is important right now, because you said Diane was still young at heart, as if young at heart was a compliment, because everyone says young is good and old is bad. What's wrong with being old at heart?
That's a good point.
Young as a positive and old as a negative. I just need to say that.
That's fine. No, I get your point. That's excellent. You could have a bit of a discussion about that too in the lockdown world, because that is a saying that we say, isn't it, without thinking. Good. Thank you for bringing that up.
I mean, young is not as good as old. Old is great.
No, it is. Yeah.
Sorry if there were some groups that didn't get a chance for everybody, but now we have a few minutes. So if anybody has anything on their mind that they didn't get a chance to say and would like to, do it now.
Good idea.
Dora, do you want to have your turn?
Well, I feel quite intimidated, because I feel that there's been a sort of thought police, that it's not acceptable to say that aging is difficult. And I am struggling with aging and agency. And if I'm not allowed to say what I feel, then I don't want to speak.
Yeah.
You're not alone at all. Look, aging is not for sissies.
No.
We need more courage and more ability to struggle through than ever before. It's not easy. Not easy.
Unfortunately, we have the wisdom, because we've lived the lives we have, to face those issues. And that's why I think it's important to talk about what they are between us.
Because I think an important thing to deal with as we get older is that society as a whole tends to try and remove agency from us. Mm-hmm. And in my 60s, I was really interested to find the effect of trying different things. You know, you think, great, you're going to change jobs, you can do stuff that you haven't had time to before. And then I found the reason I didn't do some of those things was because I was shit at them. I've spent all my life working really hard to get good at something, and I stopped doing that, and I was doing other things that I found hard. So I've worked really hard and got a balance of doing things that I could do, which made me feel good about myself,
and do some things that I couldn't do. I even sang for a bit. I mean, that was really interesting. And then in my 70s, just as I've sort of got somewhere, I've started to have some serious health issues. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding it really hard to claim agency.
Yeah. And the grief too about this is it. You know, we've done our life now and we're just in the last part of it. And for me, there's a grief about that. Not all the time. It's not the only thing. There are other things that are absolutely wonderful and I have gratitude. But, you know, it's grief for the fact that we're right at the end now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know whether you feel that.
Yeah, no, well, I think back to when I was 25 and I just finished my first major relationship, left my first big job, was traveling around Europe on a train. And I thought, right, I'm old, I'm 25, that's it. And it was so wonderful to discover that it wasn't it. And there was lots more. And I'm waiting for another 25-year-old moment, really.
There are lots of its as we go through life. Every one of us has had some terrible griefs and humiliations and mistakes and horrible things have happened to us. And also each one of us has had some great successes and some enormous joys and some hot sex. And, you know, and that life, that mixed life is still going on for us. Some of our despairs are a little more acute. Some of our joys are a little more remote. I used to enjoy eating everything and eating vast quantities of food, and I can't even get a half of an entree down now.
But, oh, that is sad. Now, that is sad. I have to say, Artie, I really feel sorry for that one because that would be grim.
Thank you. But I like cooking. And I, you know, believe it or not, I like shopping. So there I am. Here I am, this radical lesbian feminist who enjoys shopping. What does that say? Yes, I'm a person of variety.
Well, I think the things for me, and that may be to do with what you say about shopping, is that I find that I'm more interested in the minutiae of my life, in the tiny things rather than the big things. So it's not any longer about grandiose ideas of world travel, but more about watching a bee on a little piece of grass. So I think that it has been a move in my life to kind of center down to the smaller things and the slower things. Mm.
Well, I'd like to say to Marie and to, is it Laura or Lorna?
Laura.
Laura. Laura. Welcome to Australia.
Well, Marie is from Sydney originally. We're here because Kate has just had a baby. So Marie is now grandmother and Pearlie and me. And this lucky Kira has 5 grandmothers.
Oh, what a bonus.
Congratulations, that's fantastic. During this Zoom, I've been doing some knitting, you might have noticed. I'm about to become a great-grandmother.
Great.
So I'm trying to do a rug before he comes along. But congratulations on the new grandchild. That's great.
Just wanted to comment when Laura has said it, but Diane said it first, at being the age of 30 and feeling that was old. I so remember that. And I think, for me, life began at 38. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting. I became a lesbian at 35, but 38 was when I felt I started to live again, really live. And I think it's quite incredible how different ages bring out different things for us. And sometimes the decades don't matter. I heard something on the radio the other day that really amused me, talking about if you take a drop of our blood and you test it, you can tell what age we really are because we don't really represent the age we are in chronological years. And I thought, well, now that's an interesting point to think about. What age would that describe us as? Does it go by what, you know, what criteria? But I do think where society puts certain things on it, you know, turning 40, feeling over the hill or losing a job and sort of 65, and such as Fiona was talking about. And I think we, the most important thing is that we have these conversations, isn't it? Yes. So important.
Can I just say something about society thrusting it upon you and you do it without thinking? When I was 33, I was asked to submit an article to a book called Coming Late to Motherhood. And I did. And it just makes me laugh now that I accepted that 33 was coming late to motherhood. You know, like, makes me laugh.
And as a lesbian, coming late to motherhood as well. Lesbian birth, as it were, like lesbian giving birth.
Yeah, yeah. That, you know, it's just...
Because I have such a political take on everything, and I always have, and I don't know where it comes from, but I just have, the stuff about ageism that bothers me, it isn't really when the little boy on the bus in the seat in front of me turns around and says, "Mummy, the old lady said," anyway, and I have to remember that he's talking about me. It's the political stuff, which is the ageism of younger women, really encouraged by society, which means that, and I think we did it too, which means that anybody over a certain age, their history, their experience as women is kind of non-interest, you know. It's almost, it is in fact the opposite sometimes, because women of our age were women's liberationists, automatically, I don't mean all of us were, but of our age, automatically women's liberation is shit. To me, that's ageism. You know, it's us thinking we invented feminism until we found out better, you know. And that just bothers me because I see it's a political tactic, you know, conscious or otherwise, of the society, the patriarchal society we live in. You know, older men can get respect and their history can get passed on and they can be revered and put on pedestals and things. You know, some can't. Working class men, you can forget it probably. But with women, it's just, you know, talking to a younger woman, it's almost like, who are they seeing when they talk to me? It's that classic thing. And when I was doing the research for a film called For Love or Money, which some of you know, which came out decades ago, 1983, it was classic. I talked to little white-haired old ladies and I had to recognise that if I saw them on the bus next to me, I'd be making assumptions about who they were. And then I'd talk to them. And they'd been madly political radicals. Not, you know, that's why I was talking to them. That's why I was talking to them. But that was how society saw them. And now I feel we're in the same position. I hate it. Give me these shits.
But I think the difference with us, we're old radical lesbian feminists. It's never been the case before. When we were growing up, even in the 40s, in my 40s, there were not many role models. Now, we are role modelling a really ancient old age for the young ones. The 20s are just, you know, 40 years
old. And as part of that, Jean, like, I don't care how other people see me. I look through my eyes.
Yes.
And I've got this language thing. I'm a writer, and I will not accept that young is good and old is bad. I will not accept that. It, you know, I was teaching yoga when I first let my hair grow grey, and my yoga said, "Oh, but you'll look old if you let your hair go grey." And I said, "Well, I am old. Good for me. Hooray for old," you know. And, you know, it's something I want to promote. Every time I hear the word young or old, I want to hear old is good, old is better than young. And I believe that. I mean, yeah, I also appreciate everything that Wendy was saying. It's difficult. It gets more difficult. I can't do the yoga I used to do. And I'm a bit shocked that I can't, but I accept it and I do the yoga I can do. And the other thing, you know, I just went to my first yoga teacher's 90th, and she said, I pray and wish I don't reach the next decade, because our next step is death. We are at the end, and yes, it's the end of life, but death is real. And to have a good death is as important as having a good life. You know, I'm scared like Margo of Alzheimer's, but you deal with it, somebody also said, as it comes, and accept it rather than rushing from it and saying how negative it all is. It's scary, but we need each other for support, especially those of us who aren't in a relationship, an intimate relationship.
And don't have grandchildren or children or grandchildren.
Hey, right. They're still hard. Relying on the children or grandchildren either. No. So that's
true. Well, that's true. You can't.
I know, but I know so many women who are doing the dutiful daughter thing with their aged parents. And I have to remember it's not going to be me. Did it with my mum. It's not going to be me.
And can we hear from some other women that we haven't heard from here in this group? Anybody else? Rowena, would you like to talk about what it's like aging in Warhope?
I've never felt such isolation. It's not that there aren't people around me, but COVID has really, really plucked at the depths of sanity. And I've never felt that before. I don't think that's age. I don't think that's age related, but it takes the wind out of your sails. And so it's even more reason to be connected with groups and with others, and to enjoy the slow things. Funnily enough, Wendy, I was observing a bee on the top of a plant today, and I really enjoyed that. So it's very important for my sanity and for us as a group to enjoy the slower times and to get in touch with your real basic energies that can be renewed at any time with others, with exercise, whatever. It's all right. This world is a bit too yang for me. I'm not going to get grumpy about it, but it's hard work keeping at your own pace without being judged as slow or sick or whatever. It's all right. I'm just going to go at my own pace. And there are other people around you always that will notice that. And they're there with you.
Anybody else that hasn't talked yet that would like to say something?
I think I always probably was ageist until I started to be aged. And now I've stopped being ageist, I think. And I'm much more accepting of aged as I am now aged. But, you know, in myself, you know, I'm still just Judith. I don't particularly feel like I'm very old, except some days I feel like shit and I am old. And on other days, you know, I'm just fine. You know, I'm on the bike and I'm flying down the hill. For me, it's attempting to be in each day and in each minute for what it is. And sometimes when it's really shit, you know, I'm just dealing with it and making the best of it and just accepting it and doing the best I can and pushing through in the hope, buddy, tomorrow might be better. And normally it is. That's all. That's all I need to say.
Thank you.
I actually wanted to just comment on that point that link with what Laura said and what Wendy said about the loss of agency and the fear of that and the grief at that. As people who know me know that I've been a very active sort of person. I never really saw myself as a sporty person or anything, but obviously I am. I mean, I never do anything else, but I still do ballroom dancing and kayaking and bushwalking and cycling and gym. So there's something there about the activity, but it's that I know, I mean, I've got very serious arthritis, which is I'm fighting off by keeping fit and keeping my body okay, but there's a limit to it. And I was told by the neurosurgeon. The surgeon said that he thought I had 5 years before I might need back surgery. I mean, this was just arthritis. It's that fear, it's the grief that you know there, even if it's not 5 years, even if it's 10 years, you know things come to an end and have to readjust. It's that lack of unsureness about where that will be and how you will manage.
But we've already started to manage a lot of things that we can't do. You know, I used to write big books. I can't write big books anymore. I'm not as strong as I used to be. I have to be careful crossing the road because I can't just run, you know, across the road if something's coming at me suddenly. And I think this is our next challenge as radical lesbian feminists, because in the same way when we were 20s and 30s and 40s, there are challenges that we needed to meet, and we met them. We set up refuges, rape crisis centres, the whole thing. Now, in our old age, we've got these other challenges. The medical profession is still as bad as it ever was. We have to be proactive on our own behalf. And just to remember that we can still do these things. We can still challenge our doctors or say, this isn't what I want, but this is what I do want, and I need to be kept informed. So I think it's just another frontier as old lesbians that we need to just... And we're very practiced at it, be active on our own behalf, be politically oriented. And so I see that is just, and death and dying, how do we want to die? How do we want to die in a way that is going to be how we want to do that? I want to die naturally. I want to die here at home. Now that may or may not happen, but that's what I'm leading towards, dying in, you know, aging in place and dying in a way that I'd like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter, we're all going to be dying sooner rather than later, you know, and we have to have our wills done, we have to have everything in place, you know, just to be responsible, as we've always been responsible all the way along for our lives and how we want to do them, what sort of work we have, if we want to leave work that's no longer in our best interest. We now have to look at how we want to be in our old age in a way that is going to keep us as active as we need to be or want to be, but also grieving for the losses and do it as carefully and as kindly and everything else in a way that we've always done.
The other thing I really wanted to say was there's a richness about conversation, the conversations that we have with each other, that we have in groups, and the conversations we have about health. I can't believe the amount of times someone's made a suggestion to me that I've been able to take on board, either to do something different in the way I manage my health or speak to a doctor or whatever. I mean, Diane, for example, is the amateur cardiologist in our group. She knows everything there is about heart, but Laura has been enormously helpful to me since she'd been here in making suggestions and the problem I've got at the moment. And I think we have conversations that are really, they're not, how's your operation or let me have a look at your last scar or anything like that. They are far more healing. And I never expected to have such richness in this part of my life. It is just one of the most enduring, wonderful things that I could point to. I really am grateful for it. Thank you to everyone.
As a younger dyke, I couldn't have imagined, there is no possible way I could have imagined that at age 80, I would be in electronic communication, visually and orally, with a bunch of dykes, some of whom I know and some of whom I don't, and about whom I care so deeply. I could not have imagined that, so my reality is unexpected and delightful. My arthritis is getting better. I'm trying to get acquainted with my inner sloth. You know, these are plateaus that we go through in our life. You go along, and suddenly something changes. You break up, or you have a fall, or you get ill, or you get a job or lose a job, or, you know, whatever. And right now, my plateau is imminently satisfying. And thank you for that.
Thank you.
I think one of the things that I'd like to say is I think that part of these conversations and part of what we do ourselves is somehow pushing, moving on and being role models, and knowing that we are once again working hard between us and individually to make us the best role models that we can. And like, if you're confronting racism or you're confronting anything, it's a bit like, well, look at the bits inside that are contributing to the negative images and to turn them into positives. And I think, as Pearly said, the conversations are great. And I think the joy of all the experiences that we've had mean that we have the tools to confront ageism. And that's what part of getting older is for me.
Jean was saying, at least we're doing it collectively. There's got to be something going for being the largest demographic in human history, the baby boomers. We're all doing it together. I mean, really. But also 1040's been great for me over the years, because there's always been women older than me, and that's not an experience I have. Once my 90-year-old auntie, my 97-year-old auntie died, she was and remains a great role model, not a lesbian feminist, but nevertheless used to say things to me like, oh, Margot, she said, I've had a lot of sadness in my life, you know, Dick committed suicide and her son drowned. And she said, she took a breath and said, but I wouldn't be dead for quids, would you? She said, I just want to see how it all turns out. You know, because she was aware that we were in this interesting time where lots of things were coming to a crunch. So that was her. But apart from her, I don't really know anybody older than me in the family that is a useful role model. So I've actually found one woman who's not here with us anymore said to me about retirement. She said, are you thinking about retirement, Margot? I said, yeah, more or less, yeah. She just said, don't leave it too long. That's all she said.
Sounds like Dorothy.
It was Dorothy.
Yes, I knew it was.
When I said that, she said, I got it from Jan Aitken. And sometimes I think of you, Pearly, and I go, Pearly will always be that 5 years older than me or whatever it is. Gee, she's in good nick and she's doing great, you know, and she's still lively and with us. You know, I can do it.
I'll speak to you from the grave when I'm no longer up and doing it.
What? I mean, it's been really important and continues to be really important to me, because I am one of the baby boomers. I was born in 47, so I'm really saying the ones who aren't the baby boomers who are older than me, you know, you've been really important to me, as have various other political women who have left us, you know, over the years, but like Edna Ryan and so on and so forth. But, so thanks to the group and the collectivity of it, I think that's something we've all kind of said in some way. And I do think, looking at the screen, I think probably we're the lucky ones. That's the other thing to realise. Not everybody's been as lucky as us. I really believe in luck. I've always have. And now as I get older, the more I do, I'm lucky I've got the genes that I've got. I'm lucky I've got the social group that I've got. I'm lucky I live in the country I live in. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, I'm just lucky. You know,
and that's not merit. That's luck.
That is. Thank you, Wendy. That is luck. And what is it that I've got to be cranky about? I'm so, in the grand scheme of things, I'm so lucky. You know, that's me.
Clean air, clean vegetables, planet that's got clean water.
Being bombed. We're not being bombed. We're not in the Second World War, or we're not in.
We're not living in Yemen.
Jesus.
You know, I mean, on and on and on it goes. There's a heap of thousands of things that I can say is wrong with the world, and that makes me furious. That's why I'm a lesbian feminist. But we're also the lucky ones, you know. Diane, you've had huge challenges with your health, but you've had access to medical support.
Absolutely.
You know, that makes you alive
lucky.
And well, and
it makes me
fabulous.
Very lucky, Margot.
Now, you know, that's right. Otherwise you wouldn't even be with us, sort of thing. I'm just grateful for that luck. You know, and I can't call it anything else, really. You know, it's gratitude, I think's the thing. Gratitude.
Yes.
Gratitude. Grateful to be where I am. And if my major complaint at 75 is that I've got wrinkly skin, I'll live with it. I'll live with it.
It's absolutely fabulous we're having this discussion. And don't forget, we will have some more. And there's also the Country Lesbians Association. I'm aware of our agreement about the time, and it's 6:45. I think the Country Lesbians Association idea, Diane, is going to be fantastic, because that can bring in our friends. Perhaps we can get more of our Melbourne friends, and maybe even some of them from other states. It's so good to see you, Jean and Artie.
What do you think? Melbourne's in the country, do you?
No.
I just want to thank Bridget and Fiona and Diane for such a very good start to our session. It was really good.
Thank you so much.
Lots of love, and thanks again to everybody for coming. And thank you, Diane, and thank you for our speakers. Diane.